Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, everyone. Today we're joined by David Simons. David is Software Engineering Manager at Kaluza. Thanks for taking the time to do this, David, on this quite a nice, actually, Friday afternoon, I must admit, for this time of the winter. So yeah, thanks for sitting down with me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Good to be here.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. So to get the ball rolling, to get us into this, let's get a brief background of your career history and how you got to be Software Engineering Manager at Kaluza, if you don't mind.
I studied statistics at university. So I always kind of thought maths was my calling and got stuck into statistics at university. And then as I was kind of coming to the end of my degree, I thought I'm definitely going to have a career in gambling. Like
really?
Bookmaking and sports modeling and kind of how football and cricket games play out. And that was kind of what I was going to do. So I sat down at university and looked at where I needed to get to in order to do that as a career. And I saw that the one thing that was really important was the ability to do programming, to sit down and do software engineering. And that was the tool that you use to process and plow through all of these numbers. So I didn't have a lot of experience doing that in my degree. And so I thought, that needs to be the first thing I do in the industry, is actually just become a decent coder. So I left uni, went into coding, and realized that is what I was meant to do. All of this stuff about numbers and data processing was actually a bit of a distraction. What I really wanted to do was like process information and build things. And I got a real satisfaction from doing that. So I joined a consultancy and kind of got my experience coding and writing websites and web applications in 2012 for clients like the BBC, for public sector. I became a good coder on larger projects. So I think as you become more senior in an organization, developers often find this pressure where they're pushed to either stay technical or become a manager.
Yep.
And there's this real sense of a dichotomy between, do I want to lead people and projects, or do I want to lead delivery and low-level code and architecture? And I think I hit that dichotomy maybe about 18 months ago, where I had to start thinking deeply about, I want to have a bigger impact. What are the things that I'm impacting at this higher level? And I actually joined Kaluza as an architect.
Right.
So I joined thinking about systems and processes. But I realized quite quickly that it's very hard to have an impact, or I found it difficult to have an impact on technical direction within an organization. It's all very well making diagrams and drawing pictures and showing them around to people, but that I found it was much more rewarding to have an impact at this higher level by inspiring people and inspiring individuals to be making these changes. And that doesn't mean that you kind of close your door to the technical world. I still use my experience as a coder and an architect on a daily basis. But I just find that it can be more rewarding when you're having that impact through the medium of driving teams and inspiring teams rather than drawing pictures.
Yeah, very interesting. I've heard similar stories, actually, in terms of taking the step up to manager and leader. But what I really want to find out is, right, so say if you're a coder, you're an engineer, but you don't want to be a manager or a leader. So surely there's a ceiling of progression there that you get to, that you can't go any further without being a manager or a leader.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. And I think still one we're trying to decide as an industry, because I feel like if you ask five different people at the moment, you'll get five different answers.
Hmm.
I think it really cuts to the heart of what it means to be senior in an organization. For me, being senior means changing your influence and the scope of your impact. So it means solving larger problems and being responsible for more things. And I feel like to do that, then you do need to move your worldview to a higher level. I don't think that you can be solving broader problems while still working on line-by-line code. And I definitely have seen that in my career, that if you do want to solve these higher-level problems, you can't code anymore. You just physically don't have the time. Mm. But I do think that that means that there's a really interesting problem, because there are a lot of absolutely excellent developers who want to stay developing for their life.
Yeah.
And so you have this retention problem. How do you keep somebody who doesn't have an interest in moving into these kind of thought leadership or technical direction setting visionary roles? How do you keep them engaged and motivated and interested? So Kaluza, where I'm working, has recently relaunched its career ladder. So one of the things that we were very clear that we wanted to do is, as well as a people leadership and a technical leadership track, we wanted to make sure there was sufficient growth in our senior developer roles.
Right.
So we can have people sticking around, being interested, still getting rewarded at a higher level, and then making sure that they're in a position where they may not be necessarily having that impact to solve broader problems, but we still want to use them as proven technical experts solving really difficult, interesting problems.
Yeah, and that's great to hear as well. And also what I was thinking is, you know, after I've been speaking on this podcast for a couple of years now with loads of leaders in technology, what immediately strikes me about that is that being a manager and being a leader is a completely different role to being an engineer. It's totally different. So it's crazy to think that engineers will always want to be a manager or a leader. And like you were saying, it's kind of, the industry hasn't really figured it out yet. Is there anything else that sticks out as what the tech industry hasn't really figured out yet?
If you're asking me about what makes me stick out like a sore thumb in the tech community, I like Gantt charts. Like, it is my dirty secret. I think that where I've worked in the past, there is a danger that we think of ourselves as these kind of trendsetters, these kind of edgy hackers that are kind of free spirits. And I'm going off on my rant. Sorry.
Please do.
I think that as an industry, we are immature. I think that there has been a real adverse reaction to some kind of waterfall, to some really high process projects, kind of really needing the kind of high governance, high project management experience. And I've worked on projects like that suck. Don't get me wrong. You know, there is a sense in which if you're spending 50% of your time reporting on the status of a project, would it not be more effective to just reuse that 50% of your time to actually just write code at the end of the day? Mm. So I definitely think that we came from a very bureaucratic place, and maybe we've gone too far the other way. Maybe we've now gone to say, well, estimation is hard, so let's not estimate. Or project management is hard, and we often get things wrong, so let's not hold ourselves accountable to dates or deadlines. And I sometimes feel like there's a middle ground, that maybe we can do just enough process. And some places get this spot on. You know, I'm not saying that every place, I'm not trying to tar everybody with the same brush, but Gantt chart's a dirty word in the agile software industry, and they're lovely. Like, actually just bringing up an MS project spreadsheet and just putting the tasks you need to do in and putting the resources in, and then having this view of your project, and then being able to say, oh, if I add one more person, then this happens to projected deadlines, or, oh, we missed that deadline, what impact does it have on some of the upstream processes? I feel like there is just in maybe especially in startups, that there could just be that little bit more governance. Mm. And if anybody listens to this, they're going to think I'm this kind of curmudgeon, because we're not doing videos, are we? So they're going to think I'm this curmudgeonly ex-IBM employee who's like spent their entire life working with project managers, and they're going to think it's Stockholm syndrome. You know, I'm this kind of 30-something person who's kind of ping-ponged between the startup sector and public sector. You know, I've seen small businesses work and fail, and I've seen large businesses work and fail. But I think the one thing that really sums up successful projects is you have an idea of what you're building and you're constantly holding yourself to account against timelines and, you know, deadlines. And I think that's sometimes really valuable to give your stakeholders a sense of confidence in what you're doing.
Mm. Very, very interesting. And as your, you know, software engineering manager, right, how do you define success then, personally?
So I get held to account, rightly, for the delivery of products and the happiness, enjoyment, and personal growth of developers on my team. I think that's a really interesting combination of things because they often pull in different directions. You know, you could be an absolute slave driver and push people to work, to hit your deadlines well in advance of it, and then you have a team leaving and moving on. And then alternatively, you could just give into everything your team wants to build the tech debt and build these fun technical solutions and use all the bleeding edge technologies and never really actually deliver any product goals. And so I think trying to balance those two things is really difficult. And I think that's kind of a really good measure of success as an SEM. The one thing I would say is that only works because we do have an excellent product function in our organization. Because really, you judge the software output of a team by how much it makes for your company or how happy it makes your customers. And I'm able to take a little bit less of a focus on that because I've got such a good product team behind me, able to say that if we have working software at the end of the day, it is the right working software. But in an organization with maybe less of a mature product function, then that is also something we would need to be thinking about.
And, you know, I'd like to segue, if we could, into talking a little bit about data. Now, I'm going to start this with a statement. Okay, I want to get your opinions on this statement. This might not be necessarily to do, well, this isn't to do with closure at all. It's to do with the dependency on data, right, as a whole. Now, I believe too much dependency and relying on data too much hinders creativity. What are your thoughts on that statement?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Yeah, there certainly is this kind of mindset in modern technology that anything worth doing is measurable.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like that as a heuristic. You know, something that it's worth challenging if that isn't true. You know, if you're building something and somebody says to you, cool, why am I investing in this? For you to be able to say this, you know, you will get more customers, you will get happier customers, you will make more money. You know, I think being able to do that should be something as an industry we hold ourselves to account to. I do think that we're not just playing about, you know, in a ball pit. This isn't our own personal projects. These are jobs for us, and being able to justify our employment is actually really important. I do think having this as a normal way of working makes sense. That's, I think, the point that you're getting to, which is it correct to apply that truism 100% of the time? I think it's actually a really, really legitimate challenge because I think you lose that sense of exploration. You lose that ability to say, let's invest in doing some research and development.
Yeah, and you know, just on the topic of data, data architectural patterns as well. Can we talk a little bit about that?
What do you want to know? I've been working around this for a lot of my career. So, I think it's a really interesting topic of conversation because I think in the last 5 years, I feel like this is where, as a tech community, we're doing a lot of thinking and worrying. We had the revolution of the microservices. You know, we decide that as a team, you don't throw code and just kind of blob it onto your monolith, and teams should be accountable for that whole end-to-end process. And as a direct result of that, I think there's now like really interesting conversations going on with, now that you've kind of distributed everything, how do these teams work together? How do these services work together? And how does data flow across the application. And I think this is as much an organizational problem and a leadership problem as it is a technical problem. I think that information flow often mirrors the organizational structure. If teams communicate a lot, then in fact, there's a law, the Conway's law, that your technical architectures are doomed to mirror your organizational structures, for better or worse. And trying to match your low-level architectures to your team structures is, well, it will happen. So I think, yeah, it's really interesting now that we've decided that we think, in general, teams should be accountable for relatively discrete things, how we now link that together. I really like Kaluza's approach to it. It was one of the things that attracted me to it in the first place, which is this very asynchronous pattern. So this idea that we're sticking a real-time message queue across all of our services, we almost have this central nervous system of data going through it. And Teams microservices are putting data on this in real time. And I think it is genuinely one of the things that makes Kaluza, which is an energy platform, quite different to the rest of the market, is that it's able to power itself in real time because of this asynchronous message passing. And it's able to be relatively resilient as well, because if a single service goes down, which it will happen, you know, we build to fail as an industry, when it comes back up, it's able to pick up that message processing and really have such a minimal blast radius and not impact the platform so much. So I think this is, you know, in 2021, I think this is probably the way that I would be encouraging large distributed teams to go. But I'm really interested to see what happens in the next few years. I think it's such a budding area of the industry.
Well, yeah, it will be interesting to see where the dust kind of settles with this as well. And, you know, I'm really interested in where you learn about this. I mean, things are changing all the time. And, you know, what are the resources that you rely on? I mean, especially when you're looking at stuff that's, you know, ahead of the curve with this. I mean, is there much out there to continue to learn?
I genuinely think there are a lot of resources. People talk all the time about what their company's doing, especially some of these larger organizations like Spotify and Facebook. Their developer blogs are excellent. Companies are speaking all the time in podcasts like this one, and conferences and other really great resources to find out a lot of things. I think the skill is less in trying to find where people talk about these, but trying to separate the wheat from the chaff.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, for one second, suggest that anybody comes onto this podcast and you know, isn't saying words that are definitely worth listening to. But maybe in other mediums, like conference talks, it's worth looking at saying, this worked for you. You know, obviously, these people are sincerely saying this is something that is effective for our organization, and saying, is this something that we could use in our organization? Is it something that would be relevant? Is it something where maybe this works for you because of your culture or because of your size or your legacy? And actually, we should be trying to understand why this works in this organization and working out how we can pull what we can pull back into where we're working. So I think just trying to dive that one level beyond the case studies, which I think are relatively easy to access, and saying, what can I learn from that, is where I'm really trying to get to.
Yeah. So what are your views on remote working then? And also, actually, do you think that your opinions on remote working now are very different to how they would have been 3 years ago?
I do think my views on remote working have changed somewhat. But aspects of it have stayed the same, and aspects of it have changed. The aspects of it that have changed is my personal opinion about myself remote working. Before, I felt like there was a real sense of community built around the office, and also just this real kind of culture of, this is where you're going to get work done, and that you kind of leave at the end of the day, and this is your barrier for your work-life balance. You leave at the end of the day, and then your mind gets to pick up work and put it aside. And I think that was actually really healthy. And people who bring work home with them, to some extent it's unavoidable.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's a culture that is actually more harmful in the long term than good. I think the thing that hasn't changed my views on remote working is that it is good, but you have to invest in it. I think that you don't get it for free. You can't just pick up an office that has been co-located for such a long time and dump them at home. And I think the investment, like, some of it's obvious. You need laptops. You know, if you're going to be doing a hybrid approach, people need to be able to pick up their laptops and take them to work. You need VPNs. You need a high-performance VPN so that people's productivity isn't affected depending on whether they're in the home or in the office. But I also think there's a lot of more nuanced things that everybody's been seeing over these last 18 months. You need to invest in a remote culture. It's really hard when people don't see people on a daily basis to build a sense of camaraderie and trust. And sometimes I think people that might not have left the company they're working for, normally because of the friendships and the trust and the community they build, don't get that sense. And I think it's a lot easier for people to walk out their jobs at the moment.
100%.
Because they don't have ties. And maybe that's a good thing. You know, I certainly don't want to suggest that people feeling like friendship and family ties them to a job that they're less suited to. You know, that if someone told me that, I would be aghast in my team. So maybe actually having a little bit more of a mercenary approach is good for the individual, but it's certainly not good for the company.
Yeah, really well said. And I think when you say the word team, you immediately picture people together, don't you? So then when teams have been physically separated, how do you get that team camaraderie? I mean, how do you do that at Kaluza, and how do you do that with your teams? How do you bring people together?
Yeah, so I have one of the most distributed teams within Kaluza. We have one person in each of our offices. We have one person in Edinburgh, one person in Lisbon, one person in London, and one person in Bristol. So
wow.
It's certainly challenging. I'm a massive believer in communication, just talking to people. Organized fun. You know, everyone hates it, but you yeah. stick that 5 minutes at the start of the day and you literally just say, how are you? You know, what is there in your life? One of my colleagues has an absolutely infectious positivity, and there was this lovely moment where we said, when we ask how are you, everyone's like, oh, I'm fine. So let's actually start saying, what good thing happened to you? Like, share a piece of good news. And that's really lovely, just to kind of get that team vibe. And then also taking opportunities to come together. We had a really lovely away day in September, and that was the first time the team got to know each other in person, and making sure that time is blocked out to just have conversations, whether it's fun conversations and getting to know you conversations, or, you know, let's front load some of the architectural whiteboarding for the quarter. Let's pop that in a session and do that in person. Let's run a retro in that session. So really trying to make the most of that time together to build those connections. But I also think it's important to acknowledge that there are other opportunities than just for teams to build those bonds. Because if these people are reliant on each other, then they won't really be getting human contact more than once a quarter when we all come together.
Yeah.
So actually trying to build up bridges outside of just direct kind of agile scrum teams, like, let's get together in each of the offices and let's have an Edinburgh social and a Lisbon social. We're making sure they're set up within the communities there. Looking at chapters, so as Spotify called them. So a UX and design practice, a Scala engineering practice, and making sure that people have got those friendships there. So they're not just reliant on the immediate people that they work with on a day-to-day basis. They have multiple avenues to connect.
Mm. Amazing. Amazing. And, you know, what kind of worries me a little bit, or I don't want to say worry because I'm not in a position to see if this is true or not, but what are your opinions on, you know, with people working remotely? And I would initially think that if you're all working together as a team in an office, individuals are more likely to be promoted, maybe, because they're seen and their voice is heard more. And I just worry that remotely with teams distributed, as people aren't being seen as much, I've really rambled on with this one. Is it more or less likely for people to be promoted to, you know, that essentially that's what the question is. I mean, it's a hard topic to think about, isn't it? Because it shouldn't affect it, but I just worry that it might do.
Yeah, I certainly hope not. And this isn't, we don't have, you know, 100 subgrades on our career ladder at Kaluza. So this isn't something I think we yet have the data for. So the reason I say I hope not is because this is something that existed in the pre-pandemic world. So I think like the golf club effect, it's sometimes known as, or the Rachel from having a cigarette effect, this idea that there is a danger that the people that managers speak to most on a daily basis are the ones that have their ear and the ones whose work has the biggest effect. And that's often terrible from a diversity and inclusion perspective, because I know that it's very often the people that managers have most affinity with, so they spend the most time with, whether that be in the pub or on the golf course or outside having a cigarette. So I would hope that as industries that do see this problem really look and say, was this always the case? And actually, do we have a massive diversity and inclusion problem from this perspective? I think Kaluza tries to get around that by being objective and meritocratic. And I know that these can sometimes be trigger words as well, but they try to do this by looking at the impact somebody has had. They ask individuals to pop together evidence of the impact that they've had at the organization. And they try and judge people relatively fairly across the entire organization by saying, are you having an effect on the scope of problems that we would expect from somebody in the grade above you? And are you demonstrating the techniques necessary to tackle those problems in a relatively independent manner? And that hasn't changed from before the pandemic and post-pandemic. So I hope that problem is not something that will crop up. But if it is, it's something we need to look at over time. I think there's going to be so much data, going back to that operative word, coming out in the next couple of years from the impacts of pandemics. And it would be interesting to look at, you know, are people, as we come to a hybrid approach, are people in the office more often more likely to get promoted? If so, is that because, you know, I think kind of as we move into this hybrid approach, the data is going to be really fascinating. And I think there is a lot we need to look at. You know, we're living through a disaster like no other in our lifetime. And I think we're all doing the best we can to deal with this. And there's going to be a really exciting opportunity on the other end to take a look at this data and say, what good stuff happened that we want to adopt? And I think hybrid working from home approaches is absolutely going to be one of those things. And what bad things do we want to drop? And I think, you know, remote Christmas parties, that's going to be one that nobody enjoys. Like,
yeah.
Really, we now.
Yeah. I've definitely brought the conversation down there, but it's a genuine worry of mine. It's a concern that I'm kind of, you know, we don't know how it's gonna pan out. But, you know, just to bring it up a little bit, so obviously, like, you know, it seems that every tech company in the world is recruiting for engineers right now, and the demand is incredibly high for candidates. So if there's someone out there listening to this, an engineer, for example, and they go, I really like the way David sounds and, you know, how he runs his team and the business. So what could they expect if they joined your team or Kaluza? What's life like going to be like for them?
Kaluza is a company of incredibly motivated people. It is a energy platform that really is trying to tackle the climate crisis and the energy transition crisis. And so you have got people here who are really passionate about making a difference to the climate. And that is rare. But, you know, nobody's passionate about investment banking. They might claim they are, they're lying. But there is genuinely a real mission here that the company buys into. So I think when you join, you will be swept up in positivity and passion, and that will hopefully get you through that honeymoon period where you're learning what is a really interesting but tricky tech stack with Scala, functional programming, asynchronous Kafka backbones, and a really interesting technical problem as well. We care about health and well-being. So, you know, I know that sometimes passionate programmers is a euphemism for people who abandon all sense of work-life balance at the door. Not that. Like, we do have, we are healthy in that respect. And I just think it's a group of people really willing to get stuck in and solve interesting challenges.
I mean, you know, in kind of, I don't want to say recent times, in fairly recent times, or relatively recent times, let's say, you know, the general public are thinking about energy a lot more than they ever did in, say, the past 20 or 30 years. So with that, do you think that we're going to see a lot more companies like Kaluza trying to tackle this?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are definitely competitors out there that we're looking at, and we're saying, oh, you know, let's actually do a bit of market research and make sure that we're not in a saturated market. That said, I think if you wanted to talk about that, you'd need to speak to some of our market research or our sales team. But there are definitely competitors out there. And, you know, it's maybe a bad thing for Kaluza. You know, our business plans need to account for fighting with competitors, but I genuinely think it can only be a good thing for the planet.
Exactly. Yeah. You're all fighting the same cause. Exactly. So, yeah, well, I think that might be a nice point to wrap up there, David. Thanks so much for taking the time to do this. We've definitely put the world to rights on this podcast here. Yeah, so it's been really interesting to get your thoughts. So thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.